Some of the world's greatest literary classics were nearly banned. Just ahead, find out about the movement to ensure free expression on the printed page. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. And just ahead, we'll take your calls on Banned Books Week. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, author and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Dave Barry on his hilarious look at Florida in his new book, Best State Ever. And a look at weekend events. All of that ahead coming up this morning. But first this hour, this week marks Banned Books Week in America. It's a time set aside by a national alliance of groups, all united in the celebration of the freedom to read. We begin the hour this morning with a look at the history of banned and challenged books in this country and what's happening around town this week to mark the importance of reading. Here in studio, our own book club blogger, Stacey Goldring. Good morning.
Good morning.
Professor Courtney Barclay of JU.
Good morning.
And Lisa Taylor, librarian with the Jacksonville Public Library. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ladies, great to have you all in studio. And here's our question to callers. What is your favorite banned or challenged book? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Stacey Goldring, let's begin with you. Banned Books Week actually began in 1982 because there was a sudden surge in the number of challenges to books in schools, bookstores, and libraries. Why did that surge in the 80s?
You know, I'm not sure, but they have been banning books since books have been, since Johann Gutenberg has been around. And even in the early 19th century, Hansel and Gretel was banned. Mm-hmm. And, of course, today we have Little Red Riding Hood still being banned. And I would like
Where is Little Red Riding Hood banned?
I forget the name of the city, but definitely in the United States.
Yes.
And it was recent, wasn't it? Julie, could you go ahead? Lisa, could you go ahead and explain a little bit of why books like this are banned and what as a librarian you do when something like this comes across your plate?
I don't remember the city where there was a challenge to Little Red Riding Hood, but the reason for the challenge was that Little Red Riding Hood was carrying a basket or a bottle of wine for Grandma in the basket. And the main reason I think that people challenge books is just because there is something in the book that they, as an individual, find offensive. As a public librarian, the library is all about the First Amendment, your freedom of information. That's part of the library's mission statement. And the library believes that there should be books in the library for all of the public. And the public mm-hmm. includes a very diverse group of people.
Dr. Barclay, mm-hmm. you recently held a forum about The Crucible by playwright Arthur Miller on the JU campus. That was banned from libraries and stages across the country when it was first published.
Actually, The Crucible was not widespread censored. It received really great criticisms when it was first released. It has since been challenged by some parent groups, but we used it last night, and we actually held that forum at the University Park branch of the Jacksonville Libraries. We used it as a theme, really, to talk about censorship because of what that play is about.
And let's talk about that. That's a perfect way to get into a deeper discussion about this.
Sure. So Miller uses the Salem witch trials set in the 1690s to talk about how we can censor diverse ideas based on, in the 1690s, these puritanical views of mm-hmm. religion and cults and witchcraft. And of course, that was an allegory to the 1950s McCarthy era, where we were searching out communists with the House Un-American Activities Committee, or HUAC.
Right, and here's a list for everyone to think about. The top 10 most challenged books of 2015, Stacey. Looking for Alaska by mm-hmm. John Green. 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm.
I Am Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond Magenta, Transgender Teens Speak Out. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Someone just handed me that book to read.
And it's Such going to be book. On Broadway. It's a fabulous book.
Yeah, The Holy Bible. Mm-hmm. Fun Home, Habibi, Nazreen's Secret School, A True Story from Afghanistan, and Two Boys Kissing.
I think that we can have Lisa talk about the number 9, Nazarene Secret School. And could you locally explain how we've experienced that in Duval County and the banning and challenging of that book? Because this is fascinating.
Right. Last year, it was only a small group of parents, but there were parents that were opposed and presented a petition to the school board against the book Nazarene Secret School and also The Librarian of Basra. Nazarene Secret School is about, it is a true story about a girl who was willing to defy the Taliban to try and receive an education. And The Librarian of Basra is another true story. And these were both written by Jeanette Winter. And The Librarian of Basra was trying to save books in Iraq, you know, during the war, because she thought that books were so important. So it's kind of ironic that parents were petitioning against these books, and it was strictly on the basis of religion because the people in the book were Muslim.
Were Muslim. And did they feel that it gave too positive a portrayal of Islam?
It was basically because people were praying to a different God than these parents did. And that's
and they didn't want their children exposed to that.
Yes, that it was a positive portrayal of Muslims. And that's why it's so important to defend these banned books, because we are a diverse country of a lot of people and, you know, different types of people. And if you don't like a particular book, then what you should do is not read that particular book. And schools will always offer that option to parents. So there's no reason to take them away from everyone else.
And it's banned Books Week in America. Is it the Harry Potter series, The Catcher in the Rye, The Handmaid's Tale, Slaughterhouse-Five? What is your favorite challenged book? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Stacey Goldring, Dr. Barclay, people might not realize how these literary classics are so frequently challenged.
Yes, they are. And even current books, I don't know if you're familiar with Persepolis 1,
yes,
Persepolis
yes.
2, also a banned book, 2014. It came in at number 2, and I know there's a lot of book groups in town that are presently reading that book. And again, people find the theme offensive. Just as in the 1960s, there were challenges to the dictionary because of the objectionable words found in the dictionary.
And you'd think societally we'd move past this, but we don't. Professor Barclay, what do you talk to your students about when you explain the importance of Banned Books Week?
Well, I talk in general about the importance of free speech and how important it is in society to really listen to diverse viewpoints so that we can grow as a society.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to add on Persepolis, that's ironic too, because that takes place in the 1970s in Iran, and this is about a girl who is fighting Iranian repression, and she is pro-Western, and I can't imagine why someone would want to ban that book.
And here's it for crying out loud. It's a graphic novel, thus it has been challenged because it has graphic depictions.
Let's go to your calls now about Banned Books Week. Here's a tweet, by the way, from Cody. He writes, here's a fitting quote for today. A truly great library contains something in it to offend everyone.
Absolutely.
I love that.
And the number to join us is 549-2937. As we talk about Banned Books Week, what's your favorite challenged book? Nicholas on the South Side. Hi, Nicholas. Good morning.
Hi. Morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, my favorite banned book is one that had been banned for almost 100 years, over 100 years, and only was released recently. It's called Decadence Manchu. It's about an inflammatory reporter from the time, and he basically wrote about his experiences as a gay man in China, right around the Boxer Rebellion and before the fall of the Empress. It kind of depicts a case where he probably over-exaggerates his experience, but it shows homosexual life and culture in a way that has never been really expressed in history books, to my knowledge, up until this point in my experience.
This is great. I have never heard of that. I'm very
How
excited.
Fabulous.
Will you make sure you tweet that or whatever you do magically via social media so I can get a copy of that title and the author? I'd really appreciate that. That sounds fascinating.
Decadent Manchu. Nicholas, thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Let's go to Conrad on the south side. Hi, Conrad. Good morning.
Good morning. Member of the First Amendment Foundation, concerned taxpayer to Duval County, and a great champion of people's ability to use their own critical faculties to decide these things. I think we're killing that incentive. In the second grade, I had a teacher who read to us at Panama Park School, and God help our souls, she read Tom Sawyer and then Huckleberry Finn to us. Can
God
you imagine
forbid.
How that
God
is?
Forbid. God forbid. Thanks
right.
goodness for
good
what was
for
that?
You.
What was that teacher's name? Let's honor
Ms.
this
Gage.
Teacher. Miss Gage?
Miss Gage, she became Mrs. Middlecoff.
Miss Middlecoff,
oh,
wherever
you
are, patron saint of banned books.
Thank you, Conrad. Lots of calls as we talk about Banned Books Week on this show with our own book club blogger, Stacey Goldring, and a panel of guests. We want to know, what is your favorite challenged book? And it's 549-2937 as we go to Cass on the Fuller Warren Bridge right now. Hey, Cass. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
So my favorite banned book is probably Our Bodies, Ourselves.
Classic, sure.
60s and 70s, and that was the book that really gave us a way to talk to our mothers, gave us a way to talk to each other, gave us the language to use to know about our bodies and ourselves, quite literally. And I know it's been banned time and time again because it does give out a lot of very specific health and wellness information, but anything about female sexuality scares the living daylights out of people.
Thanks for the call, Cass. Dr. Barclay, that came out, in the early 70s, as I recall. When we say a book has been banned, what we're really saying is that it's been challenged. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, it depends. So
it depends on the situation,
right.
Of course.
So When we talk about a banned book, that's where something actually has been removed from bookshelves or is no longer available to a particular audience. So it might be banned from school libraries, but still available other places. But when we talk about a total ban, then that's where perhaps a book has been placed on an obscenity list, and you might actually be prosecuted for selling that mm-hmm. book. And that has happened in a variety of places. Mostly it's about sexual content.
What are some of the most notorious incidents you know of, Stacey Goldring?
Well, of course, To Kill a Mockingbird, which I believe is one of your favorite books. Yes. That is one of the all-time top banned books, along with Catcher in the Rye and Great Gatsby, basically all the Fitzgeralds, all the Hemingways. But Catcher in the Rye ranks as the number two book that's been banned. And some very interesting reasons why it was banned in 2001, because, quote, it is a filthy, filthy book. Another reason, the profanity, and another reason simply because of the way it portrays it encourages rebellion of the young. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know what's going to offend anyone, so you just assume you're going to offend everyone. And, you know, if you're banning the Bible and the dictionary, everything else is game in between, yeah? I mean, mm-hmm. it's really remarkable.
And in a moment, we're going to talk about the Jacksonville Public Library's banned book happenings this week, also a new book club partnership Stacey's going to share. We get asked all the time, how can I join the First Coast Connect Book Club? Well, up until this month, it's been a virtual club. You just listen on the air. That's about to change. We'll tell you about that in a moment. But right now, lots of calls as we ask you, what's your favorite banned or challenged book? Let's go to Tracy in Riverside. Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
I was just letting you know, I actually experienced both of those books about the library and his child from Iraq. My son's open house, their entire lesson plan was about education around the world for that semester. And before that was Africa, and this week was the Middle East. And I was excited about the teacher talking about these books. I thought they were phenomenal books. My husband specializes in the Middle East. I work with children with refugees, so I was very excited. Only to be shocked that there was about 30 parents in front of about 100 children that stood up screaming that very horrible things about Muslims, how we were planting the seed of Islam into these children, physically stole and took the books from the classroom so that their kids demanded the lesson plan come off of the wall, even though there was a letter of consent that got sent home, the parents that did not consent, they also demanded it off of the wall, very much so embarrassed the teacher, and were very slanderous. And I just wanted to let you know that I actually did experience those parents, and they did say they were going to the school board, and they did write a letter, and they actually got removed completely. They made the teacher take the lesson plan off of the wall, saying that that all this does is plant the seed of Islam into our children.
Okay, Tracy, thanks for the call.
Now she has to read the Bible to the kids.
Thank you for that, Tracy. Lisa Taylor, it's incidents like that, efforts to limit the free dissemination of information that led to the creation of Banned Books Week.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's just... It's unthinkable, really, because, as I said before, the best thing to do if you don't believe in it, then don't read it. I mean, one of the best videos I've seen is Dave Pilkey is the writer and illustrator of the Captain Underpants books, which has also been challenged a number of times because it has bathroom humor. Personally, when my son was little, it wasn't my favorite book for him to read, but he loved it, so that was wonderful for me. But he made a video about Banned Books Week, and if you have a chance to see it on YouTube, it's wonderful. And it's basically, it just tells people, take out the phrase, you shouldn't read this book, and switch it with, I shouldn't read this book. If you don't like it, you don't need to read it.
That's a beautiful mantra. And, you know, up to this point in our conversation, Melissa, I was thinking, are we in Jacksonville? This is fabulous. Mm-hmm. We are making steps forward, yeah? And then this phone call, and it makes me want to cry. I don't understand how people can want to, just shut their eyes and say, I can't see it, therefore it will not be there. And it will not be there for you and you and you. I don't understand this fear. I don't understand the fear of the written word. I don't understand the other, why people fear the other. They don't have enough confidence in their own self to make the decision. We could analyze this, and I talk about it on my blog, but the bottom line is that we have freedom of expression and we have freedom of speech. Now, there are questions that come up. What about hate literature? How do you handle that?
And I'm glad you brought that up. Just last week in Mandarin, anti-Semitic flyers were found in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that does beg the question, where does one draw the line when it comes to the limits of free expression?
And I went ahead when I heard about this, and I called the University of Florida's curator of their Judaica library, one of the premier in the nation, Dr. Rebecca Jefferson, and I said, what do you do about this? What do you do as a librarian? And she said, first, get a copy of that flyer because it needs to be preserved. There needs to be a place of responsible stewardship for all literature. You don't go ahead and get rid of it. This is part of history. We need to research it. We need to own it. And we need to learn from it. And we need to have responsible, educated academia and librarians who are the front line, like you said, Dr. Barclay, of freedom of information in order to preserve.
And meanwhile, jammed phone lines with some incredible comments from listeners about their favorite challenged book. Let's take a few more of your calls. Ricky on the North Side. Hi, Ricky.
Hello.
Hey, what was your favorite challenged book?
I don't know. I got a 7-year-old grandson who reads Green Eggs and Ham, and I like books in a library too.
Which is banned in China.
Green Eggs and Ham, yeah. Thank you for that. That's
excellent,
right.
Excellent.
That definitely made the list. Mike on the South Side. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to talk about my favorite banned book, which is so ironic. Fahrenheit 451.
It's, fabulous.
By Ray Bradbury, sure.
Book. Yeah. I turned my son onto it when he was in high school, and he lists it now as still his favorite book of all time. And it's just so ironic that it's one of those challenged and banned books. And I just want to tell you guys how awesome this topic is. And thank you for talking about it. I look, you were just talking, the woman who was just talking about her blog and whatnot about these issues. Can you throw out some connection points for that again? Joined the conversation a little bit
late, thanks,
so I'd love
Mike.
To find out a little bit more about
it. Absolutely. And the blog is
chapterandnotes.com.
Chapterandnotes. And then let's go now to Ann in Arlington. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I suppose not many people know that the book, The New Jim Crow, is not permitted for inmates in our prisons. It's banned by a 3-person committee in Tallahassee, all white people, no women. And the book is banned. Oh, the book, it came out about 6 years ago. It's extremely well-researched and well-known. Has to do with racial profiling by police officers and by the courts in sentencing black people and prejudice against African-Americans by prison employees and difficulties that ex-offenders have with regaining employment and finding housing and so on.
Yeah, I was not aware the new Jim Crow was limited inside the prison or banned inside the prison system, Anne. Thanks for sharing that.
I believe that the prison system is, there are many banned books in federal or in local state prisons, whatever. I think that is one place where there is quite a bit of book banning.
Mm-hmm. All right, Roger in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Roger.
Oh, yes, I just want to make a book that they had banned many years ago, James Joyce's Ulysses.
Oh, yes. Sure.
Yeah, that's still on the list. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think his name is the publisher Bennett Cerf. He helped to get the book over here.
Thank you, Roger. Beach had a hand in that as well,
right.
Overseas, I believe.
Well, we have some very literary listeners, don't we?
Of course we do.
Larry in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Larry.
Yeah. Yes, this is not about a favorite book, but I'm not for taking anything out of the library. I think everything ought to be available. But why can't we rate books like they do movies? PG, R, X-rated. And so the parent then has a choice whether they want the kid to read whatever it is they're going to want them to read.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Larry. Let's ask our librarian, Lisa.
Well, the library does not do that, and it is such a subjective matter by saying it would be very hard for me to say that this is an R-rated book because it's, like I said, it's extremely subjective. That isn't the way we do it. We encourage people to take an interest in what their children read and make their own decisions. But we don't set things by grade limit. Some children are more literate than others, more advanced than others, can read on a higher level, and we allow people the freedom of choice.
And we certainly, when it comes to printed material, Dr. Barclay, we throw the discretion much more to parents than we do, say, toward movies, which do have an official classified rating system.
Yeah, we've been much more protective of the written word than visual media. One of the reasons for that is the impact that visual media can have. So we have found that the balance of requiring ratings serves a bigger public interest, whereas the written word, being that it does engage your imagination in more ways and requires a little more creativity on the reader's part. We leave that more to the discretion.
Leslie in Neptune Beach. Hi, Leslie. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I wanted to just mention two things. Invite everyone to tonight's program, Banned in Jacksonville, What Books Are You Missing? That is part of the Jacksonville Historical Society's monthly program that starts the reception at 6:30 and program at 7:00. And secondly, mention that the theme of this year's Banned Books Week is diversity. Although diversity isn't often given as a reason for a challenge, it seems to be an underlying and unspoken factor so many times. So we see a lot of works that are challenged because they're about people or issues who differ from the norm. So you might find things like LGBT, people of color, gender, people with diversities, or certainly ethnic, culture, and religious minorities. So we're encouraging everyone to go out and read diverse works, diverse authors, and celebrate diversity.
Thank you, Leslie. Yeah, thanks for calling about that. Again, that's tonight at the Jacksonville Historical Society downtown at the Old Andrews Church, right by Veterans Memorial Arena, and the theme is Banned in Jacksonville. What books are you missing? Let's talk about a couple of other items of interest to our listeners. What is the library doing, the library system, Lisa Taylor, when it comes to Banned Books Week?
Some of our events have already passed, but I can say that tonight, my branch, the Southeast Regional Branch, is having a virtual readout, which the American Library promotes every year, American Library Association, and I actually did a spot for them. So it's a, you videotape yourself reading a selection from your favorite banned book. That's tonight at the Southeast Regional Branch. The South Mandarin Branch also has a program tonight. Both of these programs are for teens, by the way, where they will be making promotional videos for the Freedom to Read. Both of those are 7 o'clock tonight. There is also at the Dallas Graham Branch this evening from 6 to 7:30. They will have a book club meeting discussing Fahrenheit 451. There's a few things on Friday as well.
And I have people can go to your here. Website,
yes,
JPL.
JacksPublicLibrary.org, okay. And click on the tab that says events.
Very nice. And we save the best for last. A big announcement about our monthly book club here on First Coast Connect. Stacey Goldring, you have some news to share.
I am so excited because, Melissa, we're going on 4 years in November.
Yeah.
So for 4 years, we've been working to put together a real book club, a physical book club. And we are now going to partner with the San Marco Bookstore in the square. And details to follow. If you would like to be a part of this very special book group, go ahead and stop by the bookstore or call 396-7597 or email novel@sanmarcobookstore.com and get your name on the list. And I can guarantee you it will be a year of rich, engaging, luscious reading by all authors, diverse and banned and all languages and all font sizes and you name it.
Except Comic Sans. We will not have any Comic Sans.
No Bradley Hand, none of that. I promise.
And you know what's exciting is you will come once a month and talk about your monthly pick on the air.
Yes.
And then people who listen can come to meet you in person and be part of a physical real life book club at the bookstore talking about that very same book.
I'm just so excited about this. Community discussion about rich literature, hot diggity.
I know. I'm excited too. Well, it is Banned Books Week. Go to bannedbooksweek.org or the Jacksonville Public Library's website to learn more about how the First Coast is marking this important week. Thank you so much, Professor Barclay, Lisa Taylor with the Public Library, and our own book club leader, Stacey Goldring. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome.
Much more still ahead later, a look at weekend events with The Spectator. But speaking of books, up next, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and New York Times best-selling author, Dave Barry. That's in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things from North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Senate overrides President Obama's veto of a bill that would allow 9/11 victims' families to sue Saudi Arabia. How these lawsuits might work and how other nations might respond.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
If you're looking for the best blues show, look to the Blues Horizon. Each week, join me for the best blues, both classic and contemporary. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT 89.9 FM radio. Take a ride with us to some unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 FM. So many roads.
Welcome back. Well, New York Times bestselling author and Pulitzer Prize winning columnist Dave Barry, formerly of the Miami Herald, has done it again. In his new book, Best State Ever, Barry lampoons the state we all call home and that he loves to make fun of, Florida. I spoke with Barry about just why the Sunshine State is so often the butt of jokes. Take a listen. Dave Barry, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And you've spent many years defending your homeland, Florida, to much hilarity. Now you've compiled all of it in this book, and it's, I think, by turns hilarious and excruciating for Florida residents to read. But it must have been fun for you to write this and put this together. How did you draw upon the source material? Because, of course, there's no shortage of material.
Yeah, well, it started, you know, I live in Miami. I've been here 30 years, and for a long time, Miami was kind of the joke, but not so much Florida. And I was sort of used to defending Miami, even though pretty much every bad thing anybody ever says about Miami is true. And I even had bumper stickers put up once that said, come back to Miami, we weren't shooting at you. But then with the 2000 election, the whole state of Florida sort of became the butt of jokes. We were unable to figure out who we'd voted for. I don't know if you remember that night, but...
Yeah, oh yeah, I was here.
Gore was leading, and Bush was leading, and for a little while, William Shatner was in the lead. You know, it was like, we had no idea whom we'd voted for. So Florida sort of became the joke state that, from then on, really, and then this whole Florida man thing on the internet.
Yeah.
So... I decided to write a book defending the state and pointing out that a lot of yes, there's a lot of weirdness here and a lot of insane people, a lot of stupid people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time, they're not from here. I mean, a lot of people aren't from Florida. They come down here to commit weird acts in Walmarts and whatever. So the part of the book is that, and then part of it is a kind of a love letter to the state. I traveled around to a bunch of places, some of them pretty obscure, some of them kind of old Florida tourist attractions, but things that were really just purely Florida places and that you wouldn't find somewhere the other state, and wrote about them. And a lot of the book is that.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about everything from the skunk ape to the Weeki Wachee mermaids and obviously Disney World, but some other attractions, too, that are just so kitschy and strange that you would only find here.
Yes, and I'm talking about strange, one of the stranger ones, I went to a town called Casadega, which is north central Florida, and it is one of the creepiest, weirdest places I've ever been to in my life.
Did you get a reading? I got a psychic reading there once.
It's a spiritual, they call themselves the spiritual capital of the world. Everybody there is a psychic or a medium. And I stayed at the Casadega Hotel. This is right before Halloween, which is a kind of a especially creepy time there. And went up the street and had a reading gun, and it was a bizarre experience. Partly because the woman kept looking behind me. The woman, she was a medium. She said, you know, she was in touch with the dead, and you know, we'd be sitting here in this kind of darkened living room with candles burning and New Age music playing in the background. And she'd go, oh, I see, thank you. And I'd go, what? She goes, oh, I wasn't talking to you.
So, she was talking to someone who came through for you.
Somebody, yeah, except that whoever it was didn't really know very much about me.
Aww.
I had a lot of trouble finding any spirits who had any real connection with me. I also got a reading done for my dog, Lucy.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have my dog with me, but they can do a reading with... They get your dog's aura from a photograph. So I have a picture of Lucy on my phone, and they took a picture of my picture and then put it through this printer that made this like rainbow pattern, which they told me was Lucy's aura. And I didn't know Lucy had an aura. Lucy has a smell sometimes. But I never
okay, so Cassidy.
And they did this reading with Lucy, where and they said that my mother, who was deceased, came and played with Lucy every night, which struck me as pretty funny. If you knew my mom, that she would visit Florida for that purpose. But anyway, it was interesting.
Yeah. Now let me ask you a little bit about our corner of the state, North Florida, which is very different from Miami.
Yeah, you're really more like the South than the North, aren't you?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
I mean, you're north of Florida, way north of us, but down here, we have I live in Miami, which is basically Latin America. I mean, my joke is I moved here in 1986 from the United States. But then a little north of us, Fort Lauderdale, especially Boca, that mm-hmm. area, mm-hmm. it's, everybody's from New York.
Right.
New Jersey, Long Island. And then if you go west over to Naples, everybody's from Ohio or Michigan. But when you get up toward you guys, it's the real South back up that way.
And what do you think that says about Florida?
Well, it's just that we're not one state. That is always, I think, as long as I've been here, been true. Floridians, I guess there are some older, folks born and raised and whatever, who view themselves primarily as Floridians. But down here, especially, and I think much of the state, Orlando, the fast-growing areas, people live in Florida, but they don't identify as Floridians the way people from like Missouri identify as Missourians, or from Indiana identify as Indianans. I think in Florida, it's like we're here. It's a weird place. It's warm. The weather's nice sometimes, but there's a lot of strange people here, mm-hmm. and I'm still sort of connected with where I came from.
Right. Yeah, there are definitely more people up here who have that sort of native Floridian identification.
Right, right. And it may be why the two ends of the state do not get along all that well. I mean, politically and I guess maybe culturally, it's just like I know that when we from the way deep South Florida drive all the way up there, we feel like we're in a whole different world. For one thing, you folks are nice and polite. We're not used to that. You probably, I'm guessing you signal your turns.
Actually, most of the time. They don't do that in Miami so much, do they?
In Miami, that's viewed as a sign of weakness.
Ah, I see.
My line about Miami is that when you get here, you think nobody knows the law driving, and then after a while you realize everybody is driving according to the law. Of his or her individual country of origin.
So. Exactly. And you write so hilariously about these types of things, and you have for so many years. You're such a beloved writer and columnist and book author. Do you feel like you'll ever exhaust this subject?
Florida, no, because, first of all, it's a nuclear reactor of weirdness. I mean, the strange things just keep happening here. And the other reason is new people keep showing up, which is part of the reason why strange things keep happening. But we're up to 20 million people. We're the third biggest state now in population. And you just have a mixture of people down, especially down the southern end, it's volatile and it produces news constantly. So if you're in my business of looking for humor to write about, you don't have to worry about it ever running out. It never will, I don't think.
That's good news for you. Good news for us as we get to read your stuff. Dave Barry, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And Dave Barry's book, Best State Ever, is on sale now. Well, Hands On Jacksonville hosts the Human Race every year to help local nonprofits, schools, churches, and sports teams raise money. This is a cost-free, risk-free health and fitness opportunity to engage the whole community. The Human Race is coming up this Saturday, Jacksonville's Anheuser-Busch Brewery. And right now, Bonnie Barnes of Hands On Jacksonville has a preview. Good morning. Good to see you.
Thanks. It's great seeing you.
This is the 9th annual Human Race, and it's more than a race, though, correct?
It is. It's actually many of our nonprofits are represented. They're running, walking, rolling for their causes, be it breast cancer, be it children, pets. They're just all involved.
Now, Hands On Jacksonville really is the portal where people can enter into the nonprofit world of Jacksonville. You want to try to bring everybody together with this opportunity.
Yes, we do. We engage volunteers in our community in nonprofits. So we provide the capacity for those nonprofits to help them do their causes.
And how can people be part of this? Because it's more than the run. It's more than the walk. This is also a way to get some health assessment going for yourself.
Yes, we love the fact that it's a 5K or a 1K walk, run, and roll. And anybody can go to thehumanrace2016.com, find out what's going on, get involved, and come out and participate.
And people, you know, in Jacksonville, people have a tendency to sort of roll up the day of the event. That's possible, too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the Human Race coming up this Saturday at the Anheuser-Busch Brewery. If you've never been there, by the way, that's worth checking out as well. That maybe your child has taken the field trip tour. I don't know. But that's sort of a hidden gem in Jacksonville, too.
It is.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us. HGTV's Matt Blishaw is known for the popular shows Yard Crashers and the most recent season of Ellen's Design Challenge. He's appearing at the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show this weekend to answer all your burning questions about home improvement. And he's on the line now with a preview. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're such a popular HGTV host, so lots of excitement that you're coming to town. Tell us a little bit about what we'll be able to see you doing at the show.
You know what? I love everything home improvement, and I love going around to these home shows. I've actually never been to Jacksonville. I've been through Jacksonville. Usually I talk about yards. Now I'm going to be talking about getting your vacation home for free. I did a very popular show for HGTV called Vacation House for Free, showing people how to renovate a vacation home and then make it pay for itself. So if you've ever been interested getting a vacation home, or if you just want some tips on home improvement, come out to the Jacksonville Home Show, and I'll be talking about that.
Excellent. And when you go in and you do the DIY on camera, it always looks so incredible when on all the shows on the network, it goes from before to after. Did you ever have a really big fail, you know, where something just, you couldn't fix it no matter what?
Like a DIY fail?
Yeah.
You know, there was a couple. So Yard Crashers was the show. I'm actually shooting season 17 of Yard Crashers now. Very, very lucky to be shooting
that. Oh, that's fabulous.
It's awesome. And it's a crazy show. We do it in 2 days. You know, I've always been able to finish my build. There was one that we had a 3-day build that was in Tennessee because it was a torrential downpour on day two. So I always finish. There's only been a couple times one time that a homeowner looked at it and was not happy with what we did. So I honestly couldn't have thought of there's probably nothing we could have done that have made her feel okay about it. But for the most part, we do incredible work. And my team is incredible. I try to do designs that are DIY friendly. And you know what? It shows, and I'm glad that people just have a little bit of inspiration when they see the before and afters, because really that's what it's all about.
Well, it will be exciting to see you. You know, you're going to be appearing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on the Inspiration stage at the Home and Patio Show that's at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. Enjoy your visit to Jacksonville, by the way.
Thank you. I heard that Anheuser-Busch Brewery is a place to go to.
That's one, yeah, one of many. And thanks so much for being with us. People will love coming out to meet you. Thanks, Matt.
I can't wait. Thank you so much.
Again, the Home and Patio Show is coming up this weekend. And finally, this hour, lots of choices for your weekend. From the Home and Patio Show to the return of the Jacksonville Symphony and even some Oktoberfest fun and more, here she is to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the selfie-snapping Carrie Speckman.
Yay!
Here today. And you're taking a picture of me as you begin your segment. Why is that? What are you doing?
I'm Snapchatting.
You're Snapchatting me.
Yeah. That's
very
what
nice.
Cool kids do.
You're very cool.
Yeah.
This is well known. Now, your list this week is so long that I don't
know.
So
long.
There is so much to choose from.
So you go for it and I will talk. Speaking of Home Patio Show, the Jacksonville Magazine cooking stage will be on all weekend. And if you go to my Facebook page, you can save $3 on tickets.
Oh, very nice.
Yes. It's just, I'm a giver.
You do what you can.
Yeah.
To help people revel and party through their weekend.
I really do.
All right. So we talked about Banned Books Week this hour. We talked about the Home and Patio Show.
Yes.
Two other important events we want to make note of. The Sulzbacher Center is holding its 18th annual Transformations event. Now, they are the premier organization helping people work their way out of homelessness. So
correct.
People need to support the Sulzbacher Center.
And this, I believe they have people who have been homeless who are now successful. I'll talk about the program, and I heard it is very moving.
Absolutely. That's coming up this weekend. Go to sulzbachercenter.org. Also this weekend, your boyfriend, Courtney Lewis.
Not just mine.
The conductor of the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra is back on stage.
Yes, with Rachmaninoff.
That's right.
And the right. And they will also have costume dancers and quartets before the concert. It is considered one of the most influential works of the 20th century.
That's right. Rite of Spring kicks off the new symphony season Friday and Saturday.
And it's dressed to impress on Friday. It's red carpet.
It's red carpet. So we're
talking tuxes and full-length
gowns.
What am I going to do?
You don't have a tendency to go to red carpet events in full-length gowns.
I went to one
I've seen you roll up in jeans.
They wouldn't let me in.
They wouldn't let you in the
but
dark.
But they did let me in. What are they going to do?
Of course, you're the spectator.
It's discrimination.
All right. JackSymphony.org to be part of the symphony opening this weekend. Now, we talked about the Anheuser-Busch Brewery. That's where the human race is going to be this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to be kicking off a little Oktoberfest fun this weekend.
Yes, it's 2 days, and they will have coarse German cuisine, traditional festival fare, beer, and games. I believe they're having a wiener race.
I want to see dirndls, and I want to see those big
lederhosen.
I want lederhosen,
steins.
And I want the big foot-long steins of beer.
Okay,
and
well,
some oom-pah-pah music.
I don't know about this, but you could go to European Street on Saturday at the beach. They will have all of that.
Oh, what are they? Oh, now what? Now what's going on with them?
They have their annual Beach Oktoberfest on Saturday, and then the 22nd they have it in Riverside.
There was an Oktoberfest downtown at the vacant Shipyards property, what's going on? They're not doing it this year?
I don't know.
That's not happening this year.
Oh, but I also wanted to say Art Walk's doing their big Oktoberfest, but that's not till next Wednesday.
Okay. Speaking of beer, free this Saturday at the Jack's Chamber. It's the third annual I Love Jack's Beer Fest.
You're
a beer person, not a wine person, so I assume you'll be there.
I will be at the Home Patio Show all weekend.
Oh, really?
Yes, I will. At the cooking stage.
What, are you going to be doing a cooking demo? Well, I'll try not to laugh out loud.
No, I will not.
What are you going to be doing?
I'm a stage coordinator.
I see.
Make sure all the chefs get on and we have no issues. And then I always ask for a beauty plate to take a picture, and then that's what I eat. So I'm guaranteed I get food.
You just want the free food.
That's all about
It's all it's about.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, a few other news and notes. The 5th Annual Food Truck Championship is this Saturday at the Jacksonville Landing. This is Jack's Truckies. As the city's food trucks compete for bragging rights as the best in their category.
9 to 10.
That'll be fun.
I was supposed to judge, but again, Home and Patio Show.
You can only be in one place at a time.
The Skyway is running, by the way, so you can go right from the Home and Patio Show right on over to the rally.
All right.
Truck rally.
Last but not least, comedian Ron White, who is really, really funny. This guy is hysterical.
I think you mean Ron Tater Salad White.
Ron Tater Salad White.
I don't know what that means.
I've seen him on video. I've never seen him live.
I have seen neither.
He's a funny guy.
He was part of the Blue Collar comedy tour with Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah, it's his one-man show. This is happening Saturday night at the Times Union Center.
That's correct.
He's had lots of very highly rated specials on Comedy Central. That's a fun ticket. That's Saturday night. Ron White, go see him. And then on Sunday, Caring Chefs is holding their event at the – they do this at the Avenues Mall.
It's a huge event, like every restaurant ever known to mankind will be there. This is 30 years they've been doing it.
Yeah.
And it's to benefit the Children's Home Society of Florida.
Yeah. So if you go to the Avenues Mall on Sunday, you will see this going on. This is a premier food and wine tasting event.
Yes, it is.
And so lots of fun, and it benefits a wonderful cause. So, you know, if you're out shopping Sunday, stop by and see what the Caring Chefs are up to. And there are many more events this hour that we didn't even get to.
Correct. But so, if you go on thespectator.com, you can find out all about Johnny Lang and the blessing of the pets.
Oh, we didn't even get to Blessing of the Pets.
No.
That is a good one.
We didn't. But you can read all about it on spectator.com.
Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure and a bother.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Next on Diane Rehm, the Senate overrides President Obama's veto of a bill that would allow 9/11 victims' families to sue Saudi Arabia. How these lawsuits might work and how other nations might respond, that's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.